Hi, Will. I'm
hey,
back.
Hey, Kizzy. We're back for more.
We sure are. I'm super excited today for our next interview. Can you kick us off?
Absolutely. So we are talking today with Jamie Bricklift, who is the executive director of the Great Lakes Water Safety Consortium. And it's important to note before we get into this that this is a group that actually covers multiple states. They focus on the Great Lakes themselves, which are more like oceans than lakes for people who don't know. This is a group that does not do work on pools, bathtubs, and other bodies of water. So the real unifying factor here is the lake. And with that, I think we'll jump right into our conversation with Jamie. Jamie, it is such a pleasure to talk with you about the exciting work happening in and around the Great Lakes. Would you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your work and how you got into water safety?
Sure. It's great to be here, Will. Thank you, Tizzy. I'm Jamie Bricklift. I'm the founder and executive director of the Great Lakes Water Safety Consortium. And there have been many drowning prevention efforts and water safety activities around the Great Lakes over the years. In fact, just 20 years ago, almost no one believed that rip currents even occurred in the Great Lakes until the family of Travis Brown, who lost their 12-year-old boy to one. And they brought in scientists to prove it, and then they challenged local parks and community leaders to do better. And they wouldn't take liability or budget or any other excuse for an answer. So that was the first I really heard of a water safety movement in the area about 22 years ago. I became involved after being fortunate enough to be rescued from a Lake Michigan rip current in 2012, when tragically another young boy drowned at the same spot less than an hour after I was saved. So, you know, you can't just ignore that. You can't go back to business as usual. So I decided to learn all I could about water safety. And one of the things that I learned was that even though there were a lot of people working on it, they weren't really working together. So a small group of us in Michigan founded the Great Lakes Water Safety Consortium in 2015. And we now have more than 1,000 members working together from all 8 Great Lakes states and Ontario to help people safely enjoy the Great Lakes.
That is, an incredible, a little bit of a background. Just quick follow-up. Where did your rescue happen on the lake?
It was in Leland, Michigan. You know, they didn't expect anything. They didn't have any warning signs. They didn't have any rescue equipment out. But after that tragic day in 2012, they immediately put up signs and they put up life rings. And just this summer, a man vacationing from Chicago was there with his family, noticed some people struggling in a rip current and used one of those life rings to save 3 people and himself. You know, so often the would-be rescuer becomes the victim when they don't have flotation. He was smart enough to grab one of the life rings and everybody went home safe that day. So we just presented him with an award earlier today, our Water Safety Hero Award. And it was a very emotional event for me seeing this come full circle, as well as for everyone else in the Zoom room.
Wow, that is so powerful to have you share the story piece of how, what really galvanizes your group. You've talked a little bit about the kind of snapshot of the coalition. If you could give us just a brief summary, the coalition started in, and that anything else about that motivation, just a real snapshot of that and how you ended up with 1,000 people involved. That's very impressive and an important thing for California to consider given the population of the state.
We started very small. We began planning some live events. With my communication background, I believed in the power of face-to-face. We can't quite do that anymore, but Zoom's the next best thing. But we started bringing together for conferences and unconferences and other educational events, and they just grew. We'd move to different states every year, and it got bigger and bigger, and we decided, you know, we should do this more officially. So we registered as a nonprofit organization, And I chair the board. We have other board members, and we have a leadership team that consists of the co-chairs for 11 different action committees or focus areas around water safety and drowning prevention. So we have, you know, a lot of active volunteers, and then we have a lot of members, people that we know are interested in some aspect of water safety. Maybe it's part of their job as, you know, first responders, law enforcement, EMTs, so on, community leaders, meteorologists, you know, other survivors, victims' families, lots and lots of different people who, you know, are touched by this and want to help. Some are more active than others, but almost every day I get another request through our website for someone wanting to join us, or wanting to actually, even if they're already a member, they may want to step up and be a volunteer on one of these action committees.
Thank you, Jamie. I'm going to ask you now a little bit more about those action committees that you have and the main outputs or activities that your coalition's involved with.
Yeah, let's see if I can remember all of them. Like I said, we're up to 11 now, but messaging and media is one of them. We believe, in my background as a communication strategist, I believe in consistent messaging. You know, so often you'll see another group pop up and they feel like they have to come up with their own messaging, their own clever phrases, when there's already a lot of good ones out there, like steer clear of the pier and stay dry when waves are high. When in doubt, don't go out. You know, flip, float, and follow, all these really catchy, sticky phrases. And we want everybody to use those so they do start to stick and become memorable, or at least be recalled when someone's in trouble and they need to find a way to save themselves. So messaging and media is one. Finance and fundraising, obviously, as a nonprofit, we need to continually find sources of funding. Data and metrics, we painstakingly track all the drownings and rescues over the past 10 years, and we're building that database. It's almost complete. And then we'll start, you know, visualizing those with dashboards and infographics and so on. And keep those up to date for whenever someone's giving a talk or an interview or wants to share it, keep it up to date on the website. Education and training is obviously a huge aspect of this, and somewhat related to messaging and media, but we want, you know, we want kids to know this stuff. We want them to know how to swim, but we want them to know that there's more to knowing how to swim when it comes to staying safe in the water. So we have a lot of pop-up educational events. We have, you know, print materials. We have online materials, PowerPoint, and so on. Another one is boating and watercraft. You know, a lot of the incidents that we follow are near shore. You get, you know, all the different types of currents, longshore currents that become structural currents when they collide with an object, and they go out into the lake and collide with the incoming waves and create this washing machine effect and so on. So you see a lot of that, but then there's also incidents in the open water. So boating and watercraft, you know, some, you know, kayakers will wear life jackets, but stand-up paddle boarders won't. Why? We need to get everybody wearing life jackets. Lifeguarding committee, advocating for every community to have a lifeguard. They're the gold standard. They're the superheroes. And there's very few of them around the Great Lakes compared to the oceans. So those are a few. I don't know if you want me to go through all 11, but those are some highlights of some of the action committees that we have, where our volunteers, where the action happens.
I imagine when you first started, you didn't start with 11 committees. So can I ask just a little bit about how those committees came to be? Because I think a lot of other coalitions, as they get going, will have this idea that they're going to have working groups or committees, but they might not know really where to start or how these things come up, or you know, how that process evolves. So can you go through that process? Like if there was a new group to be added, how would that happen in your organization?
Well, let me just back up for a minute. You know, we started out, you want to start out with a powerful why. You want something that some people can believe in, that they can rally around, that they're inspired by. So at first, our mission was to end drowning in the Great Lakes. But we realized that didn't really resonate with people, because nobody thinks they're going to drown, right? That happens to other people. So we moved that to be our aspirational vision, and we still talk about it. But then we changed our day-to-day mission to be, how do we help people safely enjoy the Great Lakes? We know they're going to go in the water. We're not about no. We want them to do it, but we want them to do it safely. So from there, we created a strategic plan. And part of that plan was to identify these focus areas. And I don't know, we had a handful when we started, and the rest have just kind of come up from suggestions from members or from the public saying, oh, you don't have anything on boating and watercraft. So that was one of our more recent ones. Another recent one I didn't mention is design and innovation. You know, there's a lot of fundamentals of water safety, and we want to repeat those through clear, consistent messaging. But then there's a lot of things we maybe haven't tried yet. You know, we look at the technology innovations like LED systems instead of flags that are easier to change or can automatically change when there's warnings from the National Weather Service, or water-based drones or drones that drop flotation to people, or, you know, maybe come up with a whole new type of rescue station that's really eye-catching. Maybe people want to actually have their picture taken by it because it's so cool, like a huge life ring with life jackets hanging on it and other rescue equipment. So they kind of, we started with some initially, and then they kind of grew organically through suggestions.
I love that you called out innovation, because that's really what keeps a coalition interested and engaged. Yes. As well.
And having that vision too. Like I said, you don't want to just start with a plan. I mean, Martin Luther King didn't say, I have a plan. He said, I have a dream. Well, what's your dream? Your dream is to keep people safe. You want to end drowning, keep people safe, and everybody can affect that in some way. They can feel connected to that goal.
That's awesome. Here's one of our favorite questions. And of course, it's like what you hear asked all the time in interviews is, can you tell us a few of the key successes you've had, as well as a few of the challenges you faced?
I mean, just keeping something going for 6 years now is an accomplishment. I mean, what, 50% of small business startups are gone in a year, and about 80% fail in 5 years, and maybe 4 or 5% survive long term. So we're still going strong. We're still growing after 6 years. So that's certainly one just to be around, because a lot of organizations come and go pretty quickly. Another one would be, we've distilled down dozens of water safety messages. Like I said, we're a consortium for all 8 Great Lakes states in Ontario, but we're made up of a lot of smaller groups and organizations. And, you know, a lot of them had their own messaging. And we took a lot of time to distill down dozens of messages into just our top 10 and have them used consistently for years now in our brochures, on our website, in our talks and interviews, videos, and more. So, you know, like I mentioned, know before you go, stay dry when waves are high, flip, float, and follow. These are all really important and easy to remember. Our favorite came from a contest with middle schoolers. And this little girl came up with, you're not a fish, so wear your life jacket. So we've been using that for the life jacket piece. But you know, so many groups think they have to keep coming up with something new, but new messaging that's not the good use of innovation. That just breaks the consistency and dilutes your message instead of reinforcing it. So we want things that stick. We want to reach millions of people with these messages. So that's two. And I think we've been pretty consistent about that. And then third, I guess, you know, when we're able to influence someone, when we're able to nudge them towards safer behavior, and it might be, you know, it might be millions of people at once through a big news story, or it might be one at a time at a live event, a pop-up educational event. But they're all really rewarding and really important. And even if you didn't reach someone, you know, you're planting seeds, and maybe down the road they'll pick up on that message. They'll pick up that brochure you put at that hotel or something like that. So, you know, I love hearing stories. It's much easier to measure drownings. You know, you get a Google alert about a drowning through the media, and you track that, you get the details. It's heartbreaking. But we have people that do that. And then there are the anecdotal stories of the rescues. Sometimes they make the media, sometimes they don't. But then there's also, you know, I remembered what you said at that talk, and I made sure the kids had their life jackets on the boat. We never used to make them wear them, and now we do. That's huge. Or we decided not to go out on the pier that day because the water was crashing over it. There weren't any signs, there weren't any red flags, there weren't any warnings, there weren't any gates, but we remembered that a lot of people drown doing that. So we didn't go out. So I love hearing those stories. So those are little itty bitty success stories that add up to, this is so worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, wins are really hard to measure, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that the sector as a whole can get better at, is figuring out what are the right metrics to measure our impact. Because Drowning, yeah, like you said, drowning is easy to measure, but it's hard to assess how well we're doing over time by counting, you know, the number of drownings and stuff.
So yeah, you don't know what went on in somebody's head, what led them to that decision. They may never even express it, but you know, they came home safe that day. They had a good time, and maybe they didn't do one of the things they had planned to do, but they came home safely, and that's worth it.
Absolutely. I want to move on to challenges. So could you describe some of the maybe more difficult times that you've had with the consortium and maybe some challenges that you faced?
Well, of course, funding is always a challenge, but that's boring. I mean, there are lots of things that we do and we can do for free, you know, using social media and so on to get the word out, going to events and so on, minimal cost. But there are some bigger things that, you know, we do and would like to do if money were no object. But a second one, I guess, would be the second challenge would be kind of dispelling the myth of liability. And, you know, a lot of city attorneys will say, oh, just put up a sign so we don't get sued. Well, you know what? You can get sued for anything. This is a very litigious society we live in. Wouldn't you rather get sued for trying to do something than for not trying to do something? I mean, if you do, you know, there's probably 15 things any beach could do to make their make it safer for their residents and visitors. And if they do nothing and someone drowns, you're really going to look at the lawyer and go, well, at least we're not getting, you know, at least we're not. It's just, it's so frustrating. But we work with risk management people and other experts, and we're trying to get mayors and city managers to listen to their public safety officials, not just their lawyers. And more of them are doing that. You said a third one. I guess the third one would be, you know, keeping your volunteers engaged. You know, that people are so busy and they're so bombarded. They're, you know, every day they come home or everybody's home, but check their email at the end of the day and after being in Zooms all day, and there's 100 more emails or more. So, you know, it's really tough to get people to stay engaged. You know, they love it. And if you talk to them one-on-one, this would be my tip, talk to them one-on-one every now and then. It's worth the time. Because if you just send out an email blast to 1,000 people, no matter how well-written it is and how motivating it is, you know, it just feels a little diluted when they know it's to everybody. But if you reach out one-on-one, they're like, oh yeah, I'm sorry, I've been so busy, but I really want to get back in. And when's our next meeting? And it's worth the time to do that one-on-one connection.
That's really good advice. Yeah.
That's a great tip. Really good. So speaking of advice, what advice would you have for a newly forming water safety coalition?
Having the right leader. You know, you might have somebody that's really good at project management. You know, they need to be more inspirational to be at the top of the organization, the voice, the face of the organization. And, you know, when I think about leadership, of course, there's a million books on it and everything, but the one I like best is the admired leader. And that's a combination of the results-driven leader. And you hear a lot about those. They're the ones that get promoted and they get books written about them and, you know, the Steve Jobs and so on. But they're often hated. they're stepping on people on the way up and they don't have that followership. They don't have that loyalty. And that's the other main type of leader, which is the followership-driven leader. And we need more of those. But ideally, and it's maybe only 5% from our research, is the admired leader is the right mix of both results driven and followership driven. So pick the right person to lead it. You know, maybe you're the one that came up with the idea and you're passionate about it, but maybe you're more of a behind the scenes organizer, get things done. Maybe you step back and let someone else be the voice and the face and the heart and soul of the organization.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And I think, a difficult conversation to navigate for any new group, right? And I would imagine too that there's different stages of the group as it grows, the need for a different leader or different people involved in leadership positions will evolve and change, right? As the organization grows and changes. You cover a huge region geographically. I think you mentioned earlier, it's 8 states, right? 8 states, yeah. seven lakes. How do you manage to keep people over such a broad geographic area involved in something like this?
Well, when we were able to do live events, we'd move them around to different areas so we could attract more people and highlight the unique challenges that a different state or region or province might have. But, you know, we have so many electronic tools now, you know, the pandemic, you know, there's silver linings and everything, but being able to connect so easily, so conveniently, even with people who, you know, you wouldn't have been able to afford to fly in, or you might be not been able to afford to fly to, you can bring them in via Zoom. So having virtual meetings is important. Having other digital type of communication channels like social media, like email, like e-newsletters. So a combination. I think about face-to-face, digital, and print as the three main buckets for communication methods. And you want to deliver a variety of strategic, tactical, and motivational messages through those channels. But I could talk all day about that. But you want to have a good mix, is my point. And somebody might resonate more with a text or with a phone call or with a Zoom or with an email or an e-newsletter. And you really need to try them all. And, you know, with your leadership team, if it's small enough, you can adapt to their style. That's what good leaders do. You can't expect them to adapt to yours.
These are so spot on about the leadership aspects of having a coalition, and you've really spoken to that so well. We do have just a couple more questions for today anyway. And one of them is, how has your organization facilitated collaboration across such a diverse group of stakeholders? And do you have any advice or recommendations for dealing with conflicting points of view or priorities?
Generally, I would say you need to try to appeal to different, you know, learning styles, different listening styles. You know, some people like data. They want to talk about what's the number of drownings, what are the number of rescues, what are the stats about this state and this state, and under what weather conditions, and how high are the waves when most drownings occur, and what causes rip currents to form. They like the scientific end of it, the left brainers. But then the right brainers, they want you know, the stories. And we have, unfortunately, have lots of tragic stories, but those are motivational. And then, of course, we have a lot of nice stories about rescues. So we want to have a lot of those in our pocket for any time we get a chance to talk about them. So appealing to people in different ways, different modalities, different methods, different types of messages through different types of channels. And, you know, there's no magic way to do it. You just try all different things, and something might work for a while and then it doesn't work anymore. So you try something else. It's, you know, the only thing constant is change, right? So, that's just kind of my general approach to that, but it's working. We're growing. More and more people are interested. Not everyone is, you know, active, of course, but, you know, people open our emails, they open our e-newsletters, they come to our events, and they volunteer on our action committees. And I'm sure the same will happen for you.
Amy, how is the organization primarily funded right now? Through donations?
Early on, it was primarily funded from our events. We charge a little bit for registration, and then we were increasing that every year as we got bigger and better and attracted more speakers and so on at better venues. So it was mostly that. And then when the pandemic hit, we shifted more to donations from our members. And I hate asking for money, especially from our members, but, you know, a lot of people in fundraising say, you know, a lot of people do want to give, they want to support you, they just haven't been asked. So we ask, not all the time. I mean, I'll keep a donate button handy on the website and then in our e-newsletters, but generally just one focused area of the year, a couple of weeks, we'll do a member campaign. But the next thing we need to focus on is grants and, you know, foundation, big corporate gifts and so on. We're not quite there yet.
Yeah. So if tomorrow one of those big gifts or grants came in and you had $10 million to advance water safety on the Great Lakes, what would you do with it?
Well, that would be wonderful. $10 million. I mean, I'd make the Great Lakes beaches the safest beaches anywhere in the world with everything that we always recommend that they buy on their own, like, you know, warning signage and loner life jackets and pier gates and lifeguard programs, rescue equipment stations, you know, water-based and aerial-based drones, LED warning systems and other innovations, webcams. I mean, one of the Cadillac around here is the Grand Haven Beach, where they have a pier and they have life rings along the pier. And if you take one of those life rings off, it calls 911. And a webcam zooms right into that spot. So the dispatcher knows, oh, it blew off, or someone is trying to steal it, or there's a rescue in progress. So then they know who to dispatch, who to send for help. So I love stuff like that. I love the technology as well as the fundamentals of messaging. And I would use a lot of that money for paid digital ads, for paid social media, so we could reach as many people as we could with these messages. So everybody knows how to avoid, how to escape, and how to safely save others.
That's great. We are going to finish with the last question, which is that the open-ended question of, is there anything else that you would like to share with us today? Anything else you think that would be helpful for us to know?
I would go back to the importance of good leadership. And believe me, I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm learning a lot as I go, and we're all a work in progress. But the psychology of the leader is so important for any organization. But I would say in particular, for a volunteer organization like a coalition, you really want the right people in the right, on the right seats of the bus, doing what they're best at, and you want people that are positive and optimistic and resilient and adaptable, flexible, that can give good feedback. You know, you hear about feedback and how people dread it, like, oh, the sandwich, here's the good news, here's the bad news, here's the good news. Everybody dreads that. I like feedback where you say, well, next time maybe we do more of this and we do a little less of this. So that's just a little very small tip that can make a big difference in the continued motivation and inspiration of your teams. But keep growing, keep recognizing people. One of our teams is awards and recognition. I mentioned that we gave an award today to that man from Chicago who saved those three people safely. We give awards all the time. We have a Lifesaver Superhero of the Year Award. We have a Lifetime Achievement Award, Volunteer of the Year. Recognition and rewards is so important, especially with volunteers, because, you know, they could say, I don't need this, I got other stuff I can do. But if they feel valued, if they feel like they belong, if they feel like they're making a difference, that's a big part of the leader's role. It's not about, you know, spreadsheets and all that stuff. It's the vision and the inspiration.
Well, Jamie, you have just dropped a lot on us in a short time. So I'm very, very grateful for you and for the work that you're doing in the Great Lakes, not only for the communities there, but really, and I genuinely mean this, for everywhere else to look at you and learn from what you've been through and how you're operating, and the leadership that you've provided in your own community is really going to serve as a model, I think, for other places as other folks begin to think about what it might look like to form groups in their own communities. So I'm very grateful for your time. Thank you so much for chatting with us. And I look forward to learning more about you and your work and connecting with you offline on a bunch of other stuff like beach safety technology and you know, some of the other things that you mentioned. So.
Well, I'm here for you. And I think our website that we revamped this year is going to be a good resource too, at greatlakeswatersafety.org. There's a lot of resources by audience, whether it's, you know, the average person or an educator or a parent or somebody that actually works on the front line. So there's lots of good stuff there, but mainly just know that I'm here for you, and I'm a fan, and I'm a cheerleader for you. And I'm here as an advisor and coach and anything you need.
Great.
Thank you so much, Jamie. It's a fantastic conversation.